eKatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of eKatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are taking on a really big one, maybe the most important and definitely one of the most misunderstood concepts of our time. Sustainability.
Yeah, it's everywhere, isn't it? But what does it really mean?
Exactly. So we're doing a deep dive into Kenti Portney's key work, Sustainability, Frameworks for Systemic Change.
And this is really important for you, the listener, because sustainability gets thrown around so much. You hear it, you think maybe recycling, maybe solar panels.
Right, sort of surface level stuff.
Precisely. But Portney takes us much, much deeper. So our mission today is to build a more robust shared understanding of what systemic sustainability actually involves, you know, in policy, in business, when we talk about justice.
Yeah, and the book gets right into that tension, doesn't it? Mm. We all kind of feel we need to protect the planet, obviously. But how do you balance that with, say, a thriving economy? And crucially, with social fairness for everyone?
That's the million-dollar question.
It is. And Portney argues those trade-offs aren't just side issues, they're central. He gives us the tools to actually think through that complexity.
Before we unpack the framework itself, maybe we should talk a bit about the author, Kent E. Portney.
Good idea. So who is he? Well, he's a distinguished professor, taught at top places like Tufts University, Texas A&M. He definitely has the academic chops.
Right, but what makes his take so valuable, I think, especially for our listeners, is that he's not purely an environmental scientist. Or just an economist.
Okay.
His background is really at this interesting intersection, political science, public policy, urban studies. So he's focused on the governance of sustainability.
Governance. What does that mean in practice here?
Well, it means he's less focused on just stating the scientific fact that, yes, we need to be sustainable. He's more concerned with the messy real world how.
The implementation.
Exactly. The politics, the institutions, who makes the decisions, how do policies actually change what people and companies do? He sees sustainability as fundamentally a management and political challenge just as much as an environmental one.
And you can really see that practical side in his work.
Right.
And he spent decades looking at sustainable cities.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not just spinning theories. He connects those big global ideas about planetary limits to the very tangible decisions cities and towns make every single day. He's kind of a bridge builder in that sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And that practical focus leads straight into the book's core idea, which is that sustainability isn't some fixed goal like a destination you arrive at.
Okay.
It's fundamentally a process, a dynamic, complex, often contested process. It's about building frameworks, strong ones, for making decisions over the long haul, decisions that have to acknowledge and manage those trade-offs we mentioned.
Right. And any definition has to start somewhere. The classic one is the Brundtland Commission from way back in 87, isn't it?
That's the touchstone. Meeting the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs.
Simple, but profound.
It is. It sets up that idea of intergenerational equity. But Portney gives us the structure to actually use that definition, and that's his three-pillar model, the three E's, people sometimes call them.
Environmental, economic, and social equity.
Exactly. And he uses the analogy of a three-legged stool. It needs balance. If you lean too hard on just one leg, say, only the environment, but you ignore economic stability or social justice, the whole thing tips over.
Because it's unstable. Or just people won't accept it.
Both, really. It becomes politically impossible to maintain. So for Portney, these three pillars have to be seen as interconnected, indivisible.
Okay, let's unpack those legs then. Because this framework, this is something you, the listener, can start using right away to evaluate, well, pretty much anything claiming to be sustainable.
Yep.
So the environmental pillar first. This is the one we usually think of, right? Protecting ecosystems, respecting those planetary boundaries scientists talk about.
Mm-hmm. Resource use. Making sure we only use resources at a rate the planet can actually replenish them. Living within our ecological budget, essentially.
Got it. Then the economic pillar. This is where it gets interesting, maybe counterintuitive for some.
Yeah, because Portney isn't anti-economy. He's not arguing for stopping everything, he's arguing for a different kind of economy, one that's resilient, durable, and provides prosperity broadly long-term.
So moving beyond just growth at all costs.
Exactly. Shifting focus to systemic health. This is where you hear about things like the circular economy, designing systems where waste is minimized, materials are reused, resources stay in circulation. It's a different model.
Okay. Environment, economy. What's the third leg?
Social equity. And Portney argues this is often the most neglected but absolutely critical leg of the stool.
Fairness, basically.
Fairness, justice, quality of life, access to resources, democratic participation, all of that.
Right.
And he really highlights environmental justice here.
Which means?
Making sure the negative impacts, pollution, hazards, resource shortages don't fall disproportionately on vulnerable groups. You know, low-income communities, minority communities often bear the brunt.
Right.
If you ignore that social equity dimension, Portney says, you basically guarantee social instability down the line, which makes any policy ultimately unsustainable.
So the three legs really do have to stand together.
They do. Now, this is where the debate gets really fascinating and honestly kind of philosophical. It helps explain why there's so much disagreement on policy. It's the great substitutability debate.
Substitutability.
Yeah. Weak versus strong sustainability. Yeah. Understanding this divide is like a key to unlocking why policymakers, activists, and economists often talk past each other.
Okay, I'm listening. What's the difference?
So weak sustainability, this is often the view you find in, say, more traditional economic thinking. It basically assumes that different kinds of capital are substitutable.
Meaning?
Meaning if you use up some natural capital, let's say you cut down an old growth forest, you can, in theory, replace that loss by investing the money you made into other forms of capital, like building schools, developing new technologies, improving infrastructure, human-made capital.
So the idea is the total amount of capital available for future generations stays the same or even grows, even if the type of capital changes.
Precisely. It's like saying, well, we lost the forest, but look, now we have fantastic universities and advanced technology. It relies pretty heavily on optimism about technology fixing future problems.
Okay, that's weak sustainability. What's strong?
Strong sustainability, which is closer to where ecologists and Portney Land argues, hold on a second. It says some forms of natural capital are critical and simply cannot be substituted by anything humans create.
Like what?
Think about a stable climate or the ozone layer. Or biodiversity. These are fundamental life support systems provided by nature. Once they're degraded beyond a certain point, no amount of money or technology can just magically bring them back or replace the services they provide.
Ah, so there are non-negotiables, hard limits.
Exactly. Weak sustainability kind of assumes we can always innovate our way out. Strong sustainability says there are some natural systems we fundamentally depend on, and we damage them at our peril. They aren't substitutable.
That distinction feels really important. It explains a lot of the friction in climate debates, for example.
It really does. Okay, so if we're trying to achieve sustainability, however we define it, we need to know if we're actually making progress, right?
Yeah, measurement seems key. And Portney takes aim at our standard measure, gross domestic product, GDP.
Right. We all kind of know GDP is flawed, don't we? It counts disaster cleanup as economic growth. It ignores unpaid work.
Pollution can actually make GDP go up.
Exactly. It's measuring activity, not necessarily well-being. So Portney highlights alternatives. One important one is the genuine progress indicator, or GPI.
How is that different?
Well, GPI starts with personal consumption, like GDP, but then it makes adjustments. It subtracts for things that diminish well-being, like the cost of pollution, crime, resource depletion, inequality. And it adds for things GDP ignores, like volunteer work.
So it's trying to get closer to actual societal well-being, not just economic churn.
That's the goal. It's saying, are we genuinely better off? Choosing GPI over GDP isn't just about numbers. It's a political statement about what we actually value as a society. Do we value clean air, less crime? Shorter commutes.
That makes sense. And he mentions another metric.
Yeah, the ecological footprint. This one shifts the perspective again. It measures how much land and water area a human population needs to produce the resources it consumes and absorb its waste. Then it compares that demand to the Earth's actual capacity to regenerate those resources.
So it's like comparing our demands to nature's supply.
Exactly. Are we living within our ecological means? These aren't just academic tools. They're vital for making informed policy that actually heads towards sustainability.
Okay, let's shift gears a bit. Where does this framework actually get applied? Where does the rubber meet the road? Mm-hmm. Courtney puts a lot of emphasis on cities, doesn't he?
He really does. Cities are critical. They're huge hubs of consumption, population, infrastructure. But they can also be nimble. They can experiment. They act as laboratories for sustainability.
How so?
Through concrete actions. Things like implementing green building standards, using zoning for smart growth to avoid urban sprawl, investing heavily in public transit instead of just roads.
Right. So a city putting in a new light rail line, that hits all three pillars.
Potentially, yes. It reduces emissions and congestion, environmental. It can spur local businesses near the stations, economic. And if it's designed well, it provides affordable transportation options, especially for lower income workers, social equity. That's the three E's in action.
What about the corporate world? We hear a lot about the triple bottom line.
People, planet, profit. Yes, that's the ideal framework for businesses. But Portney is also very wary of greenwashing.
The superficial stuff.
Exactly. When companies spend more on marketing their supposed green initiatives than on actually changing their core business practices, you know, glossy reports about minor donations while the main business remains unsustainable.
So he's saying real corporate sustainability has to be systemic, baked into the operations, the supply chain.
Absolutely. It can't just be a PR exercise or a small side project. It needs to be fundamental.
Okay, we've covered the framework, the debates, the measurement, the application. Let's try to synthesize. What are the big overarching themes or messages you take away from Portney's analysis, the core mental frameworks?
I think three really stand out. First, it hammers home the need for systems thinking.
Meaning everything's connected.
Everything. The three E's aren't separate boxes you tick. They're deeply intertwined. You can't really fix climate change, environmental, without tackling the economic systems driving emissions, economic, and addressing the poverty and inequality that make people vulnerable, social. It's all one system.
Okay, systems thinking. What else?
Second, the importance of scale and context. Sustainability isn't one size fits all. What works in a dense city is different from what's needed in a rural area or at a global level.
So you need action at all levels.
Yes. And it needs to be coordinated. Global agreements on climate are essential, but they mean little without local action, city planning, individual choices, regional policies. It has to work across scales, from your neighborhood up to the UN.
Makes sense. And the third theme, you mentioned this earlier.
Yeah, and this one might be the most challenging, but also the most crucial. Sustainability is inherently political.
Not just technical.
Definitely not.
Right.
It's not just a problem for engineers or scientists to solve with a new gadget. It's about power. It's about interests who benefits from the status quo. It's about justice. Achieving real systemic change means shifting political power. It requires, well, democratic engagement to push back against short-term thinking and vested interests.
That feels potentially daunting. If it's political, in today's polarized world, how do we even move forward? Is he optimistic?
I don't know if optimistic is the right word. Maybe realistic. By highlighting the political dimension, he forces us to see that the solutions have to be political and institutional, too. We can't just wait for a tech fix. He argues that democratic processes, messy as they are really the only avenue powerful enough to enforce the long-term perspective that sustainability demands.
Okay, let's make some of these ideas more concrete. Portney offers some really memorable ways of thinking about this, like this one. Sustainability is not about sacrifice. It's about making different choices that align short-term decisions with long-term well-being.
I love that framing. It shifts the narrative away from giving things up towards choosing better, more durable kinds of value, right? It's not deprivation, it's redirection.
Yeah, exactly. And another one reinforcing the core model. The three pillars are not separate foundations, but interconnected supports that must work together or they all fall down.
That image of the stool again. It's simple but powerful. They're indivisible.
What about the tech angle?
Ah, yes. This one's key. Innovation is necessary for sustainability, but it's not sufficient. We also need institutions, policies, and social movements that can guide innovation towards sustainable ends.
So technology is a tool, but it needs direction.
Precisely. Innovation without guidance, without political will and ethical consideration, might just create new problems or reinforce existing inequalities. It needs guardrails.
Okay, so for you listening, how can you take this 3E framework and actually use it, starting now?
Well, one immediate way is as a critical consumer. When you see a product labeled eco-friendly or green that's hitting the environmental pillar, maybe.
But don't stop there.
Exactly. Ask the other questions. How were the workers treated? Fair wages? Safe conditions? That's social equity. Is the company genuinely contributing to a resilient local economy or just extracting resources? That's the economic pillar. Using the full 3E framework helps you see past the marketing hype.
And what about as a citizen and your local community?
Same principle. When there's a local debate, maybe about a new housing development, a new factory, a transportation project, apply the 3Es. We usually ask, will it create jobs? That's the economic question.
Right.
But Portney pushes us to ask, with equal weight, what about the environmental impact? Green space, water quality, environmental. And crucially, who benefits? Is there affordable housing included? Does it serve all residents equitably? Social equity. Asking all three questions gives you a much more powerful and informed voice in those discussions.
It basically gives you a checklist for responsible civic engagement.
It really does. So the final big takeaway, the real paradigm shift Portney offers, I think, is this deep understanding that sustainability is fundamentally intertwined with social justice and democratic governance.
It's not just about polar bears and ice caps, as important as they are.
No. You can't solve the deep environmental crises without tackling the underlying inequalities, the power imbalances, the economic structures that drive them. And recognizing that complexity, embracing it, that's actually the strength of this approach, not a weakness.
For me, what's really valuable here is how this book takes sustainability, which can feel like such a vague, overused buzzword, and turns it into something concrete. A rigorous analytical tool.
An intellectual toolkit.
Exactly. A toolkit for thinking critically about, well, maybe the defining challenge of our time. It helps move beyond just feeling anxious about the future towards actually engaging with the political, economic, and social dimensions of the problem.
Well put.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.